26th head football coach of this great institution. Ladies and gentlemen, our new head football coach, Mel Tucker.
Our team, we will be physical.
Wilkins again gives to Benjamin. Hit and dropped in the backfield. Mustafa Johnson shooting through for Colorado.
Sometimes you just know. And I know that the young men in that room, they're hungry.
An interception thrown by Martinez. It's picked off by guess who? Nate Landman.
I've never been in a game, as a player or a coach, that we weren't expected to win.
Blitz from Nebraska. Montez takes a shot. Drops it in to Chanel. Touchdown.
Welcome back to episode 14 of the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast. Buffs are coming off of a bye week, as is Washington. As always, if you want us to go over something, just hit us up on the mailbag, shouldertoshoulderpod@gmail.com. But let's just jump right into the Pac-12, starting with Washington State taking down Stanford. It wasn't even close, really. It's 49-22. Stanford, even though they have Costello back, I don't know what the deal is, but they kind of haven't gotten anything going. Their offense has actually looked best when, is it Davis Mills? Is that his name?
I think he was, wasn't he getting the bulk in this game? I'm not sure if Costello went out, but I think he actually was their primary quarterback.
Oh, actually was. I wasn't even paying attention because I didn't watch this game. I just assumed that Costello was playing.
Yeah, no. I mean, it seems like Davis Mills is kind of their best chance to win week to week, which is kind of crazy to say. But they have seemed more dynamic as a offense when he's in there. Not that the 49-22 scoreline shows that, but you know, it seemed like they were doing better. I mean, even if you look at the stats in this game, Davis Mills threw for 500 yards. 500 yards and three touchdowns, and they only scored 22 points. So, I mean, their leading rusher was a wide receiver who had one carry for 8 yards. So they didn't run the ball at all. And for whatever reason, they just really struggled finishing drives. I know Shaw is like a notoriously conservative head coach, and I think he punted at one point. They were on the Washington State 34 and they punted, and there was another time they were inside the Washington State 45 and they punted, and it, you know, doing the kind of stuff that you can't beat Washington State that way. But they were moving the ball most of the time. I mean, this was close. In the third quarter it was 25-22, and then they just got blown out 24-0 the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think I don't know when those punts came, but it seems like those are kind of backbreakers if you don't score against a team like Washington State that's just going to score. I mean, that's just what they do.
Right. I mean, it was a mixture of that and Davis Mills threw two interceptions on back-to-back drives in the fourth quarter that were killer because Washington State scored touchdowns right after on both their following drives. So I mean, that pretty much, that took it from a close game that was like pretty hotly contested to the blowout that it ended up being.
Yeah. I was kind of curious how, like, what Stanford's going to do in the offseason. I mean, I think their recruiting is still doing all right. But something is clearly up. I don't know if it's more defense. I guess the offense is doing okay. So, I mean, I think that's where they got to look, but they've looked pretty bad, and I think the last couple of years they've kind of been on a downward trajectory, whereas David Shaw has typically been a solid coach for them. So I'm not sure really what the deal with them is.
Yeah, I don't really know either. I mean, I think the talent is there. I think they're just young, it sounds like. They've got a lot of young players around them. I know they had some injuries. I don't know. I think Stanford is just, it's a team that's probably hard to keep on top for a long time, considering, like, you know, they don't exactly get the best fan turnout, and the school's very academic, so that's another challenge, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think they will rise again inevitably, but it just might be a year or two before they really come back. But they do have some promising stuff. I mean, Davis Mills, like I said, he seems pretty legit. So if they can build a team around him, maybe they can be back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, I think he actually is like a junior though, so I think they only have him for one more year. Which,
oh dang,
you know, if Jack West is the next guy up there, yeah, that could be a lot of trouble.
That could be a problem.
Yep. So that'll, you know, again, Washington State took care of business with Stanford. It was pretty easy for them, but I guess throughout three quarters it wasn't, but the fourth quarter they took it away. Next game we went up to Oregon State getting another Pac-12 win, beating Arizona State 35-34.
Yep, they're a different team, those Beavers. Before this year, their biggest win was that horrible one in Boulder last year. So, you know, they seem to kind of have turned a corner, honestly. And ASU also has kind of been on the downturn. We talked about it a little bit last week, but, you know, it was a close game pretty much all the way through. It seemed like they're really going back and forth. And if it hadn't been for ASU going for two and not getting it on their last touchdown, then this could have been one of those overtime games that ended up being 66-60 or something like that. Just touchdown, mm-hmm. touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. So a little disappointed we got robbed of that one, but it was a good game nonetheless. And both teams, I think, at least offensively played well.
Yeah. I mean, Jaden Daniels was back after he was hurt the week before and he looked really good. I mean, he was 24-36, 334 yards. And Jake Luton had a very similar stat line. I think the thing that's kind of really perplexing me about Arizona State is Eno Benjamin was getting a lot of like NFL hype going into this year. And I mean, he's done well. He's got like 800 some yards and a 4.3 yard per carry average, but he's not doing things like a Jonathan Taylor or like somebody else that's definitely going to get a high draft pick.
Right. I mean, the hype around him was definitely rolling before the season and justifiably so. I mean, he's had some good years, but it hasn't been what a lot of people expected. And I think in the beginning of the season, some of that was, oh, their offensive line is so bad, that's the problem. But now it's kind of more like, okay, what's going on here? Because the offensive line is still not, it's not a strength, but they seem to be able to make it work. I mean, obviously passing, Jaden Daniels, true freshman, can throw for 334 yards and three touchdowns. He has enough time to do that. I mean, I don't know. It's confusing, and it definitely seems to be holding them back. You've got to think if he was really at his best and playing super well, this team is probably definitely already qualified for a bowl at this point. But, you know, last year they won a bunch of these really, really close games, and this year it seems like they're not necessarily winning all of them. They're kind of 50-50 on these really tight contests between, you know, losing to CU earlier in the year, losing this one. They're just not coming out on top all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, Arizona State, actually, there's a legitimate chance they don't get to a bowl because they've got Oregon next. And then they've got Arizona, which is a rivalry game. And as bad as Arizona's been, I don't think you can really ever count them out in a game against Arizona State.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. There's actually some discussion about like how many Pac-12 teams will actually qualify for a bowl because there's quite a few of them here. Kind of right at four wins or five wins, but there's a lot of potential for a bunch of those teams to not make it. So mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good thing, which we'll get here to in a second, is that we do have a playoff or two playoff contenders, so they can't really say that, you know, the entire conference as a whole is weak. So
no,
you know, so the next game up on the docket was, holy hell, Utah. It was 49-3. It was kind of over pretty much from the get-go. I mean, it was a tight first quarter, and then they started to take off. Huntley just kind of continued to do his thing. I was watching up through the third quarter, and then at that point I was like, all right, this is pointless. There's other games on. And I mean, it was out of control. Huntley only threw 18 passes, but he had 335 yards.
Yeah, that's 18 yards. That's a stat for you right there. Yeah.
I mean, the guy pumped off. Zach Moss did his thing. And UCLA's offense that had started to actually look really good just couldn't really get anything going against the Utah defense, which, I mean, admittedly, it's an elite defense, so I wasn't really necessarily shocked, but I was a little surprised they only scored three.
Yeah, so, I mean, UCLA has been a team the last couple of weeks that's been, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about them, like, okay, Chip Kelly's finally got it going here, and I don't think anyone necessarily thought they were going to beat Utah, but I also don't think anyone thought they were going to lose by 46. So, you know, they just looked like they didn't get off the bus, pretty much. I mean, they just didn't have much of a shot in this game whatsoever. Utah was pretty much better in every category of this game, and Huntley and Moss, the running back, were just awesome all game long. I mean, Huntley, like you said, with his numbers, Moss added 127 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. Their defense, they had 5 sacks, 10 tackles for loss. They forced 5 turnovers. I mean, it was just domination in every way throughout that entire game.
Yeah, it was pretty much, you know, kind of like we said, it was pretty over. It was over pretty quick. And one thing I got to ask, I mean, obviously we're not NFL draft scouts or anything like that, but Huntley has got to be playing his way at least into a discussion, not like an early round pick, but like, if you got a late pick, why not? The guy's completing 74% of his passes this year. He's only thrown one pick. I mean, I don't know. He just seems like he's a guy that could play his way onto an NFL camp.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, the whole NFL scouting for quarterbacks has been a little bit perplexing to me. I mean, obviously there are some guys that you can say like, yeah, okay, that guy's an NFL prospect, like Tua or somebody like that. But, you know, I mean, there have been guys in the past that I've looked at and been like, why are they getting so much draft hype right now? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And there are guys like Huntley who really make you think, like, why not? Why couldn't they make it on an NFL roster? So I'm with you. I mean, he'll probably get a look, if nothing else. If he doesn't get drafted, definitely find his way onto a team somewhere. I wouldn't be shocked if he made a roster as a third quarterback or something like that. He's very talented. I mean, he could potentially be the best quarterback in the Pac-12 right now, the way he's been playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is, at least for what his team needs him to do. Right, I mean, they don't need him to throw for 30 touchdowns in a season. I mean, he's only thrown for 13 this year, but that's because they've got an elite running back in Zach Moss, and those two combined kind of just put everything away.
Right. And I mean, like that stat that you said, he's averaging over 18 yards per completion or per pass in that game.
Yeah. And I think it's per pass, but even then, that's still unreal.
It's even more impressive. And, you know, I mean, that means he's not throwing little short completions. You can't do that and average that kind of yardage. Like, he's making real throws down the field. So it's not like an Anthony Gordon or someone at Washington State who throws for 500 yards, but he passes it 60 times, you know? So it's really impressive stuff, and it would be cool to see him get a shot somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I for all the, I don't know how to word this, but all the attempted hatred that people try to put out there for Utah, I don't really feel it, at least not yet. So
the quote-unquote rivalry.
Yeah. So I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a shot and being successful.
Yeah, sure, why not.
Yeah, so, you know, Utah, they're still in the discussion, which we'll get to in a bit, and then the next team that we'll talk about here in a bit was Oregon. They took care of Arizona 34-6. Again, similar kind of thing. I actually watched this one as well, and it was never even in doubt that Oregon was going to win this game.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of, I don't know how you felt about it, but for me, it was kind of like a ho-hum 34-6 win. Like, I don't know, it wasn't like they blew the doors off of them at any point necessarily, but kind of a ho-hum Oregon blowout, weirdly. I didn't feel like they really crushed them out the gate or anything like that. I mean, they were up 21-6 at halftime, which, I mean, obviously they had the upper hand, and it wasn't like Arizona looked like they were going to make it close at any point. But it just, you know, they just kind of progressively throughout the game got a little bit farther away and a little bit farther away, and were clearly the better team.
Yeah, the defense was pretty disgusting in this game. I think and I can't remember now that I'm thinking back on it, but I don't think that they would have gotten one of their two field goals if it weren't for the Justin Herbert pick. So, I mean, effectively, I think the defense held them to 3 points on a full drive. And it was, I mean, it just, Oregon's defense has been pretty elite all year. I think that they just kind of wanted to get through this game. Not, I mean, they weren't trying to blow anybody out, but just kind of, like you said, ho-hum, moving along and just taking care of business while they're trying to, I guess, prepare for, I mean, I don't think they're trying to look ahead, but it seems like they're just like, they're in the mindset where like they think that they can make this playoff. And so I think they want to just take care of the business and be as safe about it as possible, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really just a matter of they're just better. Like for Arizona, they were just better than Arizona. And it wasn't like they needed big plays to do it. I mean, it wasn't quite the Oregon of old where you blink and they're up 30 points on a team. You know, it's this different style of Oregon that I think they've been trying to instill there, where they're just going to wear you down and they're going to beat you down. They've got a really good defense. They have a really good line on both sides of the ball, and they're just going to grind you away until you've got nothing left.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, they're at least showing that they can win it. I think they can win both with offense and defense. They can do it either way, which is something I think the committee is going to take into account.
Right. And I guess we should mention, too, for Arizona, Grant Gunnell actually started the game for them this week. Mm-hmm. Khalil Tate was on the bench, but he finished the game. I think Gunnell only had like two drives or something. So neither one of them had really any success, for the record. But I just felt like I should say, for Arizona, those are the guys who are controlling the game, and neither one of them could do anything.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty ugly for Arizona almost from the get-go. So, I mean, they aren't any good, really, but they do have a chance to play, spoiler, kind of like we mentioned, on Arizona State's bowl chances. So I think that's really what they've got left. They could still technically make a bowl, but they've got Utah, so probably not. It's very unlikely for them.
Yeah, probably not.
Yep. So the last game on the schedule, obviously, since Washington and CU had byes, was USC, and they dominated Cal 41-17, which I mean, I'm not looking at any stats or anything, but I can't imagine that's got to be probably near the top of points allowed for a Justin Wilcox defense at Cal.
Yeah. You know, I mean, USC is just that team that every once in a while they decide to play up to the talent that they actually have. And yep. You never know when it's going to happen. You never know what team you're going to get when they show up. But today, or I guess this weekend, it was the team where Keaton Slovis throws for 406 yards and 4 touchdowns. So, I mean, they look really good. And I can say that with confidence that they are a very good team sometimes. And other times, they, you know, they play down to their competition, or maybe they're just, they don't even, I don't know, they look like they're just not playing together, or they're not familiar with each other, or something weird like that. It just doesn't seem as connected, despite the fact that they have more talent than anyone else that they're going to play in the Pac-12.
Right. I think that just kind of speaks to how bad of a coach Clay Helton is, because I think when you look like that, when like you can come out and just like play up to the level of pretty much anybody you're playing, but also play down to the level of anybody you're playing, I think that's almost exclusively on the head coach, just not having the team in unison and in sync.
Yeah, something's wrong there for sure. But at the same time, you know, they're 7-4. It's not USC standards necessarily, and with the talent they have, you'd think that they would be able to do better than that, but for whatever reason, they can't seem to put it all together. You know, they can beat a Utah team that's pretty much just shit kicking every other team that they play right now, but they'll also lose to BYU and you know, barely squeak out a win in Boulder and weird things like that. So it's a strange team. I don't even really know what to say about Cal other than their season just really went off the rails when Chase Garbers got hurt earlier in the year. And they're just, you know, I feel like you can't even judge the team right now because their offense without him, because he did come in for part of this game and then got hurt again.
Yeah.
you can't really even judge what this team is. And the defense, too, yeah, they got their asses kicked in this one, but it's kind of like we've been saying all year, how much defense can you really play when you know that that's your only hope, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was just surprised because Monster came out, and I mean, I know Garber's actually played in this game, but Monster came out and played really well last week against Washington State, at least for his standards.
Right, right.
And then to come into this game and to only be 11 of 22 for 95 yards, I mean, that's bad. He had a QBR of 6.2.
Yeah.
Like single digits.
Yeah. Not good. Not good at all. And honestly, that's actually the one thing I would say about their defense is it kind of seemed like they decided to just, I don't know if it was pride or what, but they said, all right, we're just going to match up our corners, which is our strength, one-on-one versus these USC wide receivers. And I think they just found out what happens when you try to do that instead of dropping into a zone and trying to beat Keaton Slovis and that USC offense that way. So it got ugly fast, and I'm not totally sure why they went that way outside of just believing that they could take it when clearly the best option is the way that all these other teams have been playing them for the rest of the year.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. It's kind of like a pride thing because, I mean, realistically, their secondary, I think, is like second in the country, or was at least before this game.
Yeah. Right.
In terms of effectiveness and efficiency. But I mean, I think that's just more of a, I mean, you can win your one-on-one battles only to an extent, but when you've got 6 5 stars, not really, but you got 4 4 stars and 5 stars up there in the receiving core, it's gonna tear you apart eventually.
It's just a different level, really.
Yeah. So, you know, Cal still has a chance at a bowl. They've got who do they got left? They have
Stanford
and UCLA. So yeah. they got a chance.
Yeah, they got a decent shot.
Yeah. But, you know, that covers all of the games for this week. Or this last week, I guess. But before we get into our Washington preview, we kind of wanted to go over just kind of like a general overview of the playoff discussion and the state of the conference. I mean, obviously, Utah and Oregon are the two big ones here. I think Utah, with that win, I mean, I think they're just trying to, because whether the committee will admit it or not, they like style points.
Right.
And I think that Utah is going to try and do everything they can from here on out to get those, because they don't have their only loss is to USC, whereas Oregon's is to an SEC team, Auburn. And so, I mean, I think if it comes down to it and maybe say Utah wins out, then I think there's still a chance that they get left out over, say, like a Big 12 champ, Oklahoma, if they run the table from here out, or if I don't know, Georgia wins the SEC championship.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, if Georgia wins the SEC championship, then the Pac-12 is in trouble. That's like the number one thing that can't happen if we want to get a team into the playoff. Because if Georgia wins the championship, they probably beat LSU, who's in for sure, I think, at this point. And they're not going to keep an SEC championship team with one loss out either. So that's two spots right there. And Clemson's not going to lose, and Ohio State is probably not going to lose. So that would be worst case scenario for the Pac-12. However, I kind of think if Georgia doesn't do that, and you're looking at LSU winning out, you have Ohio State winning out, you have Clemson winning out because the ACC is garbage and they're just not going to lose. There's no way.
Right.
I kind of think Oregon and Utah, if they take care of business, whichever one of them wins that Pac-12 championship, assuming they both only have one loss at that point. I mean, you want them to be ranked as high as they possibly can, both teams. I kind of think if they win, they should be in at that point. I mean, a team like Oklahoma, just, they haven't been dominant. They lost to Kansas State, and then they've almost been had 2 weeks in a row after that, mm-hmm. too. And I think that kind of says something about you. And I just don't think any of the other, I mean, I don't think any of the other Big Ten teams are going to beat Ohio State. I think they're too good. And
right.
I don't see Georgia beating LSU in the championship game either. So, I don't know. I think they're in a good spot. Alabama also, for the record, if they get in, I'm going to be very upset. Let me just say that. If they win the rest of their games, they don't make the championship game, and they make it into the playoff, it's going to be really disappointing. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, I mean, look, I'm glad that there was a tweet today that apparently Tua is going to be, like, they expect a full recovery. And yes. It's not as bad as, like, the Bo Jackson injury.
Thank God, yeah.
I think in the charter, the committee is allowed to take injuries into account.
Right.
And an Alabama team with Mac Jones leading them is not the same as an Alabama with Tua running the show.
Not at all.
Like, I don't think that they're one of the four best teams with Mac Jones at quarterback. So, I mean, I would hope that they take that into account. Even if they, like, whoop up on Auburn, I would be really surprised if they still get in after that, because they're not going to be playing in the championship. You're going to be leaving out two Power 5 champions at that point. It seems unlikely to me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as between Oregon and Utah, I still think if Oregon wins out, I think they've got, I mean, there's almost, I would be shocked if they don't get in. I think they've got a near 100% chance of getting in if they win out.
Right.
Just because their only loss is to Auburn at the beginning of the season.
As long as Georgia doesn't win.
Right. Yeah, that's going to throw a whole wrench in things, which I don't know. I mean, Georgia's defense is, like, sneaky good. So who knows, like, how they look against LSU. I don't think their offense is good enough to kind of hold them in that game, though. Yeah. So, you know, the Pac-12's got a really good shot here. I think in Utah's remaining games are us and who's the other one?
Us and someone else that they're going to beat. I don't even remember who it is, but I know for a fact that I looked at it and said, okay, yeah, they're not going to lose.
Yeah. And then Oregon, they've got, and I know I had this up just a second
ago. Oregon State and Arizona State, maybe?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
And Utah, so, I mean, Utah plays Arizona and us. That's who it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, they both got games against teams that are either on the downturn or just straight up bad. I guess you could maybe say Oregon State is kind of on the up and up, but it's still Oregon State.
Right.
They've beaten bad teams in the Pac-12, and I think that, you know, as long as those two teams come out, like, actually ready to play, they'll have no issue winning those games.
Yeah, and it's in Eugene, so that makes a difference too.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll kind of cover this as it's going. I'm watching the college football playoff rankings right now, and guess who just got into the top 25?
Who's that?
USC.
Of course they did.
Coming in at 23 somehow.
Of course they did.
So I mean, now that, I mean, that actually helps Utah's case,
I think. Yeah,
that means they've got technically a win over a top 25 team. And I mean, obviously at the time they weren't, but
you mean Oregon?
No, Utah.
Well, Utah lost to them.
Sorry, top 25 loss.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say. So I mean, that actually helps their case a little bit if they were to stay there. I doubt they, well, actually, I guess they don't have too much left on their schedule. But yeah, so I mean, that kind of covers the playoff right now. Obviously, we'll kind of update that as it goes, but Pac-12's got a good shot.
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, assuming everyone takes care of business, if there's one loss in there, I don't think it happens. But assuming everyone handles their business, I think they should get in.
Yeah. So on to the Washington game, which we found out on Sunday is at 8 p.m. in November in Boulder. So that's going to be a cold one.
Yeah. And
I think, I think it's like 34 degrees is what it's projecting at right now. So bundle up for this one, folks.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the thing I like about it, though, is it's a weird time, and it's in Boulder, so I think that kind of lends itself to be in favor of CU. Both teams are coming off bye weeks, and Washington's last game was against Oregon State, where they kind of just barely won. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last week. It was kind of an ugly game. The Washington offense showed it's really not quite there, even with Easton running the show for the, like, I don't know how many times that is this season. They've kind of been lackluster, and you know, their defense, while pretty good, is, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a top three defense. I guess it could be a top three defense, but I think Oregon and Utah are on a completely different level than what a Washington defense is.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this one lends itself to, I'm not saying that it's heavily in the Buffs' favor at all. I wouldn't even say it's 50-50, but I think the Buffs have a real good shot here.
Yeah, you know, I think you are more optimistic about this one than I am. Like, we've kind of flipped roles since the since the start of the season, I feel like. But, I mean, I definitely don't think it's completely out of the question. I wouldn't be shocked if the Buffs make this a game. I mean, it's at home. They have played much better at home all year. That's that's just how it's been. I mean, they haven't really had... They haven't been blown out at home or anything. All their losses have been within a touchdown. So I do think they will be in this game. I think that much is for sure. I worry our offense hasn't exactly looked excellent recently. And I do think that Washington secondary could be something that's difficult for Montez if he doesn't show up and play like good Montez, which I hope he does. I mean, I hope, you know, last game at home of his college football career. Like, I hope he's coming in as prepared as he's ever been, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you got to think he does. I don't know. I think at this point, I mean, I should have come to this realization weeks ago, but I think at this point, just this offense isn't really that good, and they're not going to put up points unless it's against a really bad team. And I don't know how. Because I don't think the play calling has been exceptionally bad. I mean, I guess you have to kind of put it on Montez because he's the guy in control of all this. And if the play calling, at least to me, seems good enough, I think that you got to kind of look at him.
Yeah, I think it's been a mixture. I mean, you can definitely tell, like, pretty much any time we've put up a good number for offense, it's been because he had a good day. And any time we've had really bad numbers, he's had, like, really atrocious games. So, but that's kind of the nature of being the quarterback too. I think it's a little bit, I know we've both had issues with some of the play calling stuff, primarily with Jay Johnson. It just seems like he doesn't take advantage of the things that defenses are giving him. He like has his game plan and he sticks to it. But there definitely have been moments in games that I can still remember where I feel like the right play call was made and it just wasn't executed. Like, KD has had a couple of drops that would have been touchdowns. I mean, straight up. He had one in the UCLA game that I think he would have taken all the way. He had one in their last game, pretty much in the end zone, that he did some weird, I'm going to catch it, never mind, I'm not supposed to touch it kind of motion that...
Yep.
Everyone was like, what the hell is going on there? You know, they had a bomb to LaVisca that either was overthrown or LaVisca was short on it or whatever. I mean, they've had these plays throughout the whole year where if they execute, it seems like the offense looks better and the numbers look better. So I think part of that, yeah, you could blame on Montez for sure. But a lot of it seems like kind of the blame just goes all around. For whatever reason, we have this offense with all this talent at wide receiver, and our running backs are good, and we have this fifth-year senior quarterback, but it just seems like all year they haven't really all clicked at the same time.
Right, and you got to think that on your last home game in Folsom, senior night, maybe for once this year it'll all just kind of come together against a team that is decidedly better than us in terms of talent.
Yeah, I hope so. That would be great if they had like a really solid game. That would be awesome. You know, Ralphie is retiring, so maybe let's like go out there and get a win for her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be optimistic about it. I really do. And my heart is telling me like, hey, they have a chance. They might be able to win this thing. Washington is far from unbeatable, and you know they've had their ups and downs this year, and Easton hasn't looked great, and our defense played way better in our last game. I'm just still in this mode of I need to see it, like I need to see them come out, start this game and start it well, and then I think I'll start believing in it a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I feel really optimistic is Easton, like you said, has kind of looked pretty average for a lot of this year, and although the Buff secondary is pretty beat up, I mean, yeah, they gave up a decent chunk of yards, but they looked better than they have. And the main thing is that Summers seems to have figured out that we can't get pressure just by rushing three or four down. We got to mix it up and bring it from somewhere else. And I think if you put pressure on Eason, I mean, I've said it before, watch him do this backpedal thing that is so weird. It is so much worse than Montez's spin out of the pocket. It is just like bizarre. And he'll do it if he feels pressure. And it can lead to a lot of like good stuff for the CU defense. And I mean, I don't think this game is going to be high scoring. I think it's going to be like a, you know, 21-17, 20-14 type game. And that's, I think, the only chance that the Buffs have to win this one, because the offense hasn't shown it can execute. And the defense, I think, is at least improved enough with maybe the play calling that they can do something to slow down an already average Washington offense.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. It's true, like, the defense being better is something that you can look at and you can see, like, actual concrete reasons why they're better. It's not just like some fluky thing. Like, you can see that the scheme is changing a little bit with Summers. He's getting pressure from different places. You can see that the guys aren't blowing coverages as much and they seem to understand their assignments better. You know, guys like Nate Landman are playing way better, clearly more comfortable with where they're supposed to be in the scheme. So that's definitely promising. I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, you got to look at it. If a Washington team can only beat Oregon State 19-7, they're vulnerable.
Yeah, that's I mean, fair.
They're vulnerable. And like you said before, CU's playing at home, and that has been worlds of difference compared to the away game sans Arizona State.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic, and really the main thing that I'm worried about is as always, kind of the tight end. You know, somebody's got to cover him, and no one's really shown that they can on this defense, at least not consistently. But Hunter Bryant is, I mean, he's a good tight end for Washington, and so, I mean, similar to the, now I'm forgetting the guy's name from Washington.
Stanford?
Stanford,
thank you. Colby Parkinson?
Yes, Parkinson. I mean, he had a big game, and I think he's better than Hunter Bryant, so I don't think Hunter Bryant will have as good of a game, but I would be worried about him more than anybody else because he's a big target that kind of creates a lot of mismatches.
Right, yeah. I mean, tight ends running up the middle of the field has given us a problem kind of all season long, so I would expect that to continue probably. But you know, if the team can do what they did in their last game, where even when they give up those plays, they give up those yards, they can still kind of buckle down and get themselves off the field without giving up touchdowns, I think they're going to have a chance. And that's really what they're going to have to do. It will have to be similar, I think, to their last game where they don't give up the backbreaker plays. They're going to give up yards. I think that's just how they're built. But if they can maybe generate a few momentum plays with some blitzes to get some sacks, you know, that could really be the difference in this game for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best part about this is I think Washington's best player on offense is Salvon Ahmed. And the CU run defense has for the most part been relatively decent. Not like stout or top in the pack, but I mean they've been good enough that similar to what I was saying about Eason, I think they'll be able to slow him down to the point where he just looks average. And if you can make him look at least somewhat average, that lends itself to being the Buffs' favorite at home.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have it written down in the outline that he's kind of one of the guys to watch, and I think that's definitely a fair point for sure. But I do, honestly, I feel pretty good about that aspect because I like the way Jalen Salmi has been playing. I think Mustafa Johnson is getting healthier every week. Terrence Lang has been playing better, and just all those guys on the line. I mean, even some of the linebackers, Nate Landman is kind of back to his old self where he's just hunting the ball and making every tackle, it seems like. I mean,
he's a heat-seeking missile. Yeah,
he's been honestly, to his credit, he's been great the last few games, which has been awesome to see. So you know, more of that. And you're right. I mean, they could make him look average, and that's really what they need. All they need is to just limit. If you can limit one aspect, then that makes the rest of the game easier. So I agree with you. I don't think Easton is the type of guy who can just carry them by himself. And I think he's shown that. I mean, in the games that they've done really well, Ahmed has also had a very strong game. So I think he needs that. And if they can take that away, yeah, maybe they have a shot to keep this game low scoring.
Yeah. And we can always lean on the Ralphie retirement magic that you mentioned.
Yes.
I think that's gonna pull here. And it's also LaViska's last game, so hopefully he pops off as well.
That's true, you know. Maybe he can come out and tough his way through an entire game and put up some big numbers one more time for Folsom. That would be great. Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. He's gone so fast.
Yeah. I mean, I think it seems so fast because the last staff, for whatever reason, refused to play him more than a couple snaps a game his freshman year.
Oh, God.
Wasted his red shirt. So he really only had him for 2 years.
Yeah.
And he's gone.
Yep. And he's gone.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic. And with that, I'll let you go since I think I know you're going to pick on the opposite side of me. What's your prediction for this game?
My prediction for this game is 24-14 Huskies. I want to be optimistic and I want the Buffs to win it, obviously. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I have a hard time picking with them still, even though they won last game, they played a lot better. I still need to see it. And I would like to see that offense have a good game. It's just hard when I keep thinking about, you know, they really haven't put up good numbers recently. And I have a hard time thinking the defense is going to be able to have the same performance against Washington that it did against Stanford. So I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I'm going with.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know why I'm feeling so optimistic about this game. I really think that home CU is so much different than away CU. And this Washington team also lost to Stanford. So it's not true. Like they're just like, I mean, obviously you can't compare game to game, but, you know, I think that lends itself to some correlation. So with that being said, I took the Buffs 21-17 and I mean, I don't think either of us have it in our bets for this week, but I can tell you right now, I'm hopping on Colorado +14.5 at home.
Yeah, if I hadn't already told myself that I'm never betting on the Buffs again because my heart gets too involved, I would too.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think the Buffs on the year 5-for-5 against the spread. So, I mean, it's 50-50 shot.
Yeah, not bad. So,
not terrible, but that'll cover the Washington game. Before we get into the bets, some recruiting news. Christian Gonzalez, who was a 4-star, he's technically an athlete from the same high school as Keith Miller, Colony in Texas. He flipped. He was a Purdue commit, but he flipped to the Buffs. Was that today or yesterday?
That was yesterday.
The days flew by.
Yesterday,
I guess,
but... as in two, no, excuse me, Monday, as in Monday of this week, yes.
Yeah, we're recording on a Wednesday, but he flipped from Purdue, and that was a huge get just because he's listed as an athlete. He's a receiver and a corner, but, I mean, with his frame and with his ball skills, I think he's going to fit in really well at safety, and that's what a lot of people are projecting him as, which, for any of you that are listening, you know the Buffs need a lot of help at safety.
Yes, yes.
And so, I mean, I think he's a guy that can come in and be in the two deep from day one.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of positive stuff around him. It's cool to see the Buffs like flipping big commits from other Power 5 schools. I mean, Purdue isn't exactly anything crazy, but still, I mean, it's just fun to see your team have momentum on the recruiting trail, and he was a big one for sure. I mean, anything defensively that we're getting right now just seems like gravy after Alfano coming in, and it looks like there could potentially be a little bit more coming on that side of the ball, which would be awesome.
Yes, the more I think Chase is referring to is keep an eye on Jordan Berry. He's gotten a lot of crystal ball predictions towards the Buffs recently, which is basically the 24/7 analyst way of saying they think somebody's going somewhere. And he's gotten a lot of CU crystal balls recently. He's committing on the 22nd, which is this Friday.
Yes.
Yes. So he looks like we've got a good shot for him. And then somebody that I think we've got a good shot at as well is Jason Harris. He's the defensive end from Arizona. He's like 6'7". He's a massive dude.
Huge.
But he's committing at the Under Armour All-America game, which is actually January 2nd. But he's announcing then. So, I mean, if he were to commit somewhere, he could still sign in the early signing period and just do a silent commit. He wouldn't sign. He wouldn't sign, but he could do a early or a silent commit and then just announce on the second. So, I mean, it's not unheard of that he would be committed before then, but I think that's a date to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think most people will know about it by January 2nd. I think if it was to happen, you know, maybe we would know a little bit early. I think there's some other people out there, beat writers, who know a little early, but he's also been getting a ton of CU crystal balls coming out. So it's seems like there's a lot of momentum coming our way. I think he has a couple more official visits to go on with some other schools. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, that would be huge to get another defensive end in here, and a guy like him, I mean, he's a freak, so that would be awesome.
He's basically the freak athlete five technique, which is pretty much what this team is really missing. He's somebody that could be a pass rusher as well, and so be huge if they could get him and Barry. That would be a monster close to this class.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right now as it stands, I believe 24/7 has CU as the number 33 class in the country, and if they added him, they could, you know, get into that top 30, which would be awesome to see. See you have a class that's in, you know, in the top 30. You know, I don't know how much higher than that they could go, but they'd be jumping up the Pac-12 boards as well, and just landing these big guys is just, honestly, it's something I'm not used to. I haven't been a fan of the team as long as you have, but it's been great, and I really hope that they all actually pan out, and it's been exciting.
Yeah, well, I mean, something that came out that this is the highest number of four-star CU's had committed since 2009. But using the 247 composite score, which combines 247, Rivals, and ESPN, there's only two right now.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that just kind of lends itself to how bad CU recruiting has been the past basically 10-11 years.
Right, yeah, it hasn't been great. We could, I think, I saw something the other day, I wish I could remember exactly where it was, but talking about how there are a couple of CU guys who are recruits who performed really, really well this year that could get bumped up potentially. I think like Carson Lee and Brendan Lewis and some of those guys, but you know, all of that.
Wait, Carson, who did you mean instead of Carson Lee?
You're
right. Yeah. I was thinking of, I'm thinking of the guy on the bus team. I'm blanking right now. Carson Wells.
Yeah, you're thinking Carson Wells. Yeah. No. Yeah. Anyhow, those guys, Carson Lee and Brendan, or not Brendan. Yeah, Brendan Lewis. Sorry, there's a lot of names getting mixed up here.
It's a lot of Brendans.
Yeah, those guys, I guess, performed really well, so they could get bumped up. But really, it doesn't. The stars, once they get here, doesn't matter. It's all about what the guys can do, and it seems right. Like this class, you know, has some definitely promising pieces coming in, and you know, between all the guys that are there now, who we could potentially have still coming. I mean, Antonio Alfano isn't even included in this recruiting class. It could be a big one for us for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of class that can at least get a turnaround started.
Yes, get some momentum going.
Yeah, I mean, if they can do this on what's most likely, I mean, odds are that it's going to be a 4-win season, hoping for 5. But if they can do this on a 4 or 5-win season, I mean, imagine what they can do if they get to a bowl game, if they get 7 wins, right, 8 wins, you right. know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, those are, like we said, Jordan Berry on the 22nd, Jason Harris announcing on the 2nd of January. So just keep an eye on those two guys. Those would be some huge closes.
Yes, huge. That's on my wish list right now. That's what I want. Let's just get them all. That's
what we asked for Santa.
Let's just get them all. Yeah, that's my Christmas wish right now. Let's just, all these guys that we keep seeing, let's just bring them all in. Let's do it.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, that would be, if we got those two, that would be, we would be 100% on the four official visitors they had last weekend.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Or 2 weekends ago, I guess.
I guess we should say, too, the one negative report we have on the recruiting trail is Sneed, I think. Stacy Sneed?
Yeah, Stacy Sneed.
He decommitted. He was a running back. I think the feeling going around is that he decommitted because of Ashad Clayton coming here. They play the same position. Ashad's, you know, much higher rated recruit. I don't know if it was a scholarship related thing or what, but it looked like he just probably wasn't going to get the playing time that he needed and wasn't going to fit in the way he thought initially. So he's looking elsewhere and we wish him the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope, he is a CU legacy. So, I mean, I hope he does well wherever he goes.
Right.
But yeah, so that'll cover for the recruiting news. So on to bets of the week, and Chase, I'll let you get started.
Sure. So my first one, I am dipping back into the Pac-12 despite my better judgment, is Utah -22.5 at Arizona. 22.5 is a lot of points for them to cover, but honestly, Utah is playing like the best team in the Pac-12 right now. They're kind of on a war path, it seems like, to just blow out every team that they come across, and Arizona is going the opposite direction. I mean, they're spiraling a bit. They don't seem to know really what they're doing, and Oregon just blew them out. And really, like I said, I think Utah is playing even better. And as long as Huntley and Moss can get it going, I don't think that should be that crazy of a cover. I don't think Arizona is going to score that many points, to be completely honest. So the next one is Georgia -13.5 versus Texas A&M. This is more about the fact that I think Texas A&M isn't actually that good than it is about Georgia being very good. And I think that Georgia defense is actually suffocating. So I think A&M probably won't score much, and Georgia will do enough to cover this one. And then my last one is TCU +19 at Oklahoma. And for me, I don't know how a team that just came back from, what were they down versus Baylor?
Yeah. It was the Atlanta Falcons Patriots score.
Yes, right. Anyway, so they were down 28-3 to Baylor last week and somehow managed to pull off a miracle comeback. And now they're getting 19 points. They're giving 19 points to TCU. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. TCU isn't anything exceptional, but I mean, I just feel like Oklahoma's begging to be had this week, and I don't think TCU is going to win, but keeping it within 19, I think they can definitely do.
That's fair. I mean, Oklahoma's defense is garbage.
Yeah, so it has not been good. I mean, everyone thought it was going to be good, but it's kind of come back down to earth. And for as much as Jalen Hurts has been good for them, he also is having serious turnover issues right now. So if that continues, I think TCU is going to have a good shot. And actually, I believe TCU's defense is fairly decent. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, well, kind of piggybacking off that one, one of my bets was on the TCU Oklahoma game, but I took the over of 64.5. Like you said, TCU's defense is decent, but it's not as elite as it has been in recent years under Gary Patterson. And we all know how bad Oklahoma's defense is, so yeah. I imagine this game is going to be higher than essentially a 32-point average for the teams on this one. I wouldn't be surprised if this one's in the 40s. And easily so. So I'm going to take the over 64.5. Next game I've got Michigan -8.5 against Indiana. It's at Indiana, but I think Michigan, after the early offensive woes, has kind of really put it together, and they're kind of playing, I think, like the second best team in the Big Ten. So I think 8.5 at Indiana seems pretty feasible, especially since they just took Michigan State out into the woodshed and did what they wanted with them. So the last one I've got is Minnesota -14 at Northwestern. I know Minnesota failed me last week, which I thought was an easy win for them over Iowa. But Iowa kind of always has those games where they beat a team they shouldn't at home. So that kind of explains that one. And Northwestern is complete garbage. Minnesota, I still think, is a legit team. So -14 at Northwestern seems like an easy win for that one.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So that covers our bets for the week. And Chase has our tweet of the week. I've got an honorary one that I just thought of as we were talking about the Oklahoma game, but I'll let Chase start us off with the original tweet of the week.
So our original tweet of the week comes from our friends, enemies, the Nebraska Huskers. Their official Twitter account, at Huskers, tweeted out, "Here to stay, Nebraska announces two-year extension for Coach Frost," which, if that's not the funniest shit you've ever heard, then you probably haven't been following what Nebraska has been doing since Scott Frost got there. So it doesn't make any sense to me, but I am happy to say that Scott Frost is here to stay and will be here through 2026.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best part about that was when I saw that tweet, I was just kind of tuning into the Nebraska game, and it wasn't long after I tuned in where I heard one of the announcers say, "You know, I think Nebraska might want to rethink that extension."
I don't get it. I don't know why they would have done that. I don't know what they've seen that said, "Yeah, this guy is taking us in the right direction."
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting extension for sure. I get that you need time, but I mean, he has not really shown any sort of upward trajectory since he's got there.
Time, but he was already going to be there until 2024. That's right. What's weird to me is it's not like he was close to the end of his contract. They just were like, "Oh, you're going to be here for a while. Let's just slap two more years on there."
Yeah. I mean, I guess one of the things that I think I did see, and I think it kind of makes a little more sense, is when they did the extension, they also modified some of the original terms of the contract and created a more incentive-heavy deal. So I guess it's kind of good for both parties, whereas for Nebraska, the university, I guess he's got a higher buyout. And then for him, he makes more money if he actually does what he says he's going to do. So, right, I mean, right. I kind of can understand it from there, but still a weird situation.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but the honorary tweet, I thought about this while we were talking about the Oklahoma-Baylor game. The Reddit college football account, which has been on here a couple times, had tweeted out, 28-3 leads just aren't safe with Matt R, which is in reference to Matt Ryan, the quarterback of Atlanta, obviously, and then Matt Rhule, the head coach at Baylor. So that one kind of dug deep a little bit, but it was also pretty funny.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, Brett is a Atlanta sports fan in many respects, and the Falcons are one of them. So that scoreline is near and dear to his heart.
Yeah, it's always fun to see that one.
Yeah.
But
and it always comes back. It never fails when you see that scoreline. The first thing I see is that little post of 28-3 Falcons over Patriots everywhere.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I even sent out Snapchats.
Yeah, you did.
At halftime.
Yeah, just you did.
Telling everybody to suck it. And man, I regret that one. Yep. But, you know, that'll do it for this week's episode. Hopefully when we're talking to you next week, we've got a Buffs victory on the win-loss column, and that'll do it for this week.
Yep. As always, subscribe, follow the podcast, leave 5-star ratings, comments, reviews, whatever. We like it all. And let's go Buffs.
Let's go.